It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Wow, it's been a busy 48 hours or so. It is the ninth day of May, 2018. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. And that's where you go if you'd like to jump in and be part of the Madcap Mary Multimedia Zany Wacky Real-Time conversation that takes place in the Horn chat room during the hours in which this program is live, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And if you do so, you will be immediately met by Anatole and Man Cave and Squeaky and VT Blom. You will be greeted and welcomed. And, of course, you will be capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has this evening in the sunny climes of Northern California folded space to become, yes, Man Cave. So that's, like I said, it's been a busy couple of days. Mine started yesterday. Of course, there was no live program yesterday because early yesterday afternoon, mid-afternoon really, I got a call from MSNBC to see if I could offer some commentary on the West Virginia primary and particularly the Don Blankenship matter. I said, sure. And then I wound up driving down to Charleston. That's why there was no program last night. My apologies, therefore. But moreover, before that ever happened, Agnes and I went to vote. I'm one of those traditionalists, I guess. I mean, there's early voting and everything, but I like to go and vote on election day. I'm just weird that way. I've always been that way. Election day is, I mean, it's exciting to me. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It's exciting to me to go and participate in the process. And this was the first year that our new voter ID law was in effect. I was pleased to see that no one was particularly interested in seeing my ID, because one of the better things about an odious voter ID law is it does say that, you know, if you're recognized and they know who the hell you are, they don't have to ask you for your photo ID, and nobody did. I was prepared to raise a stink about it if they had, but they didn't. But there was still a surprise waiting for me at the polling place, because the little portable carrels that they set up with the paper ballots, where you mark the little ovals for each candidate that you chose, those were gone. And in fact, instead, every single voting position in my precinct had been replaced by a video game. Video game voting finally came to Fayette County, West Virginia. I was not thrilled. And it was kind of weird. I went through the process. The first ballot position was, of course, the Democratic primary for Senate in the state of West Virginia. It offered me a choice of Joe Manchin or Paula Jean Swearingen, and I can say that my streak remains intact of never having voted for Joe Manchin in any national race. And so I just left that ballot position blank, because I was also not going to vote for a candidate whose campaign was a fundraising and publicity stunt more than it was a campaign. So I left that blank and moved on through the rest of the ballot. But the thing is, and I don't know, there are other people out there. I think, well, he's not in the room yet, or Steve from Georgistan, I know, has to vote on a video game. And I know a lot of other people have to do video game voting. Never having experienced it before, it was a little odd. But tell me, I mean, is this how video game voting usually works? I mean, there was actually a paper ballot. I give them that. They give you the paper ballot, and you go and you feed it into the machine. And then you have to type in your precinct and da-da-da. You don't have to personally identify yourself or anything, but you type in your precinct, and then it begins marching you through the ballot. And then when you got done, it gave you a chance to it gave you a chance to check your ballot, make sure everything was, and the machine was very upset that I didn't vote for either Joe Manchin or Paula Jean Swearingen. And I don't recall there being a write-in option either in that race, but never mind. But I told it no, I meant to leave that blank, and so then I hit print, and it printed out my ballot. And so I had a printed paper ballot. But that was not enough, because then I had to trot my printed paper ballot over to a second machine, which was not a video game, but was a computer. It had no screen. There was nothing that it didn't print out a little sticker that said, I voted. I guess they quit giving away the I voted stickers. We've got a fiscally conservative Republican Secretary of State now here in Almost Level West by Cold Trump Genistan. And so maybe those were just deemed to be not fiscally conservative. But there were no I voted stickers. The thing is, the second machine didn't hand you anything. There was no receipt saying, hey, you voted, or nothing. What you did is you took your paper ballot and you put it in a slot, kind of like a bill feeder in a coin, in a change machine. And it just went in, and then that was it. And somebody looks at you and says, you voted. Could have fooled me. And I may have voted. Or, I may have ordered Chinese takeout in Minsk. There was nothing there to tell me one way or the other. I just kind of had to trust them. Which I don't really feel inclined to do. Now, this is not, this, you know, that I'm not vying to take over the corner that Art Bell and George Norrie work, but how do you know? And what was it called? It was called the Vote Smart System. And I don't know if that software is proprietary. I don't know. I imagine the whole thing is probably more hackable than an octogenarian's Facebook account receiving inquiries about helping out a poor Nigerian widow move a few million dollars around. But I don't know if I voted or not. I know what my intention was, and I just told you what my intention was. My intention was to withhold my vote from Joe Manchin in the primary, because I knew he was going to win. How did I know? Because despite all the ballyhooing and the near constant appearances over on the Young Turks by the other candidate, there aren't that many progressives in West Virginia. There aren't that many liberals. There are people who have liberal values, but there are also people who have functioning brains, who knew that that alternative candidate, that primary challenger, would be savaged by any Republican that ran against her, should she have gotten the nomination. So I was kind of out of luck for a candidate there. You know, oh well. But November is coming now. By the way, we are almost 24 hours past the announcement of the results, and I have not seen anywhere that Manchin's challenger has conceded the race or said that she supports the election of the Democrat. And her silence, well, it kind of indicates that she supports the election of the Republican. And we'll see if some third party offers her an opportunity to run a third party campaign so that the fundraising campaign can continue through November. Now, it was about 71-29 for Manchin, 71% to 29% for his challenger. And she actually drew like 48,000 votes. Now, that's a lot fewer votes than Manchin drew. But here's the problem. There were actually five candidates in the Republican primary. Patrick Big Opioid Morrissey wound up winning. Don Blankenship came in third. Evan Jenkins came in second. And then there were the couple of really loopy guys. But Manchin remains in trouble. He's got enough money to burn a sopping wet herd of sopping wet elephants, but he remains in trouble. And in a race, in a race that comes down to 2 or 3 percentage points, a petulant challenger who has served to stir the pot and keep progressives home may very well make the difference between having someone who will vote to preserve the Affordable Care Act, somebody who will vote to preserve minors' pensions and health care, somebody who will vote to make Senator Chuck Schumer the majority leader, should there be 51 Democratic senators, and having a guy who will be funded by Big Opioid. Because that's how third parties work. It is a law, it's something approaching a law of nature that third parties only hurt that party with which they are most closely philosophically aligned. Okay? But it's a long way, and, you know, just because she hasn't conceded today and just because she hasn't said that she will support the Democratic Party, you know, she ran as a Democrat. She's kind of obliged to say that, but just because she hasn't said it yet doesn't mean she won't say it someday, maybe, possibly. Meanwhile, Joe Manchin continues to be Joe Manchin. In other words, a howling disappointment. Because today he announced that he would, in fact, support Gina Haspel. You know, the torture lady, who in her confirmation hearings to be director of the CIA before the United States Senate Intelligence Committee, said she wholeheartedly stood by her decision to destroy over 100 videotapes of human beings being tortured at a secret, dirty CIA prison in Thailand, which she supervised, She absolutely would destroy those tapes again. She absolutely would destroy evidence again. Pretty un-American in my book, but, you know, who the hell am I? And Joe ran right out there to say that he was going to vote to confirm the torture lady. Good for you, Joe. My, oh my, what morals you haven't. Oh well. But in the name of fairness, I'll say this much. Trump nominated torture lady to be the director of the CIA. I'm guessing that if her nomination was rejected, he would not come back with zombie Saint Francis of Assisi. Because see, that's where issues of confirmation are concerned, that's always the case. You're always going to get the president's choice for a nominee. And given the temperament of Meta Mussolini, it is highly unlikely. No, it is not likely at all. That if torture lady were to be rejected, that he would find some moderate centrist person to nominate instead. No, not instead of zombie Saint Francis of Assisi, we'd probably wind up with zombie Joseph Mengele. Because that's just how geezer disgustus rolls. But anyway, so that was my voting adventure. I may or may not have voted. I'll never know. No one who votes on a video game ever can. And then I got the call to go to Charleston. Oh, I've jumped into the heart and soul of the program so fast that I neglected to mention, I neglected to do our thank yous. And we have thank yous to extend. Thanks go out to our subscribers this evening. Thank you very kindly to Kathleen in Minnesota, as well to Khalil in Texas. Thank you very kindly, both of you. And thanks as well to our subscribers from Tuesday morning, Nancy in Virginia. Thank you very kindly. And thanks as well to Tom in Pennsylvania. Thank you, Tom. Thank you to Marcia in Oregon. And thank you very kindly to Dwayne in PA. All of you, of course, are partial sponsors of the program and help keep the program going. Thanks as well to Ron. Thank you very much indeed. And thanks yesterday and today to Beth in Dallas. Thank you, Beth. Thank you very kindly. And with the note from Paula, because I love you and Chris Hayes, thank you to Paula. Thank you very much indeed. And so, and this evening, just a few moments ago, Larry got us started. So thank you, Larry, for getting us started. That means, and this is the downside of the whole thing, it's been a rough week. It's been a rough month. It started out very nicely with our 25th, Agnes and me, our 25th anniversary. Our silver anniversary. And after that, it sort of went downhill kind of quickly with a gigantic, terrifying car repair bill. And we've been having a hard time keeping up with the fundraising for the month as well. So not even counting Thursday and Friday, because I'm off to a funeral. We've got $610 to raise this evening. And God Almighty, I hope we can, because it's going to be a very interesting trip otherwise. Oh, thank you very kindly. Heather in the chat room says, I saw you on Chris. You were great. Much obliged. Thank you. Thank you, Heather. It was a lot of fun. I always enjoy chatting with Chris. So, 10 people at $61. 61 people at $10. I don't know. Some combination of the above to round out to $610. And I do have good news. We can start the whole thing with a challenge, courtesy of Steve in New York, who offered up a $25 challenge. He'll turn $25 into $50 if somebody will come up with the $25 first. Either 5 at 5 or 2 at 10 and 1 at 5, or you know the drill. But he'll double it. The first $25 that come in will be doubled courtesy of Steve in New York. And that'll mean only $560 to go after that to get us up to speed. You know, with my absence on Thursday and Friday, we're still going to be in a hole, but there's nothing to be done about that. It's rough and it's unavoidable. So if you want to help, run over to the PayPal button at headon.live and maybe help us kick the snarling wolf off the porch. And speaking of porches, since this will be the last broadcast of the week, here in about 38 minutes or so, we will fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable group, courtesy of Sparky. And we will have prayer meeting Wednesday on the front porch, because, of course, it is prayer meeting Wednesday. You might recall in the past we've had Thorn in the Front Porch Thursdays. Well, this is a roundtable, an Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable that falls on prayer meeting Wednesday. Because I like, among other things, to make sure that we... that roundtable conversation means a lot to me, because it's a chance for us to sort of... It's more interactive, more dynamic than just a one-on-one conversation. So if you would like to participate, you know the drill. Send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunc, one word, and he'll show you the breadcrumb trail into the room. And hopefully we'll have ourselves a lively little conversation in the middle of the week. I don't know what billable Rick does on a Wednesday, and I don't know if Steve from Georgistan is around. Heck, we may not have one, but the offer... the offer is certainly there. And like I said, we'll get that going here in a little over a half an hour. See, that's what I needed. Scott and Punky just sent me a little graphic regarding the I voted sticker. But did you get one of these? And it's, I think I voted. That's what you need. That's what they need to be passing out with these new video game voting machines. And I actually looked, I actually used the term video game voting machine when I was standing there at the polling place. Because I looked over, Agnes went first. I went, what happened? What happened to the ballots? Oh, we've got touchscreen voting now. I said, well, I'll be dipped. I've never voted on a video game before. Because I hadn't, and they all thought that was the funniest thing, calling it video game voting. And it's funny, until you realize that you might have voted, or you might have ordered carry out pizza for McMurdo Station in Antarctica, because there's really no way to know. Lee in New York, subject line, video game voting, says, technology is my field. If you had to submit your ballot on paper, at least they can have a recount. In New York, we only have one machine step in the paper ballot process. The software is likely proprietary. That means that we're more dependent on the machines and the people who choose how they work. And that's the creepy part, really. And frankly, I don't know what it would... I probably need to do some research and find out what the recount procedures are now. Because I don't know what became of the paper ballot. It may have just been garbage after it got fed into the second machine. And I'm old enough that I know that I know what it used to look like. I mean, we're talking about old enough that I, you know, slip of paper, pen, list of names, list of, you know, elected positions, candidates, therefore, and you actually stood there with a pen and you put an X by the name that you were voting for. And here's the weird part. You know, polls would close at 7:30 or whatever. And usually by midnight, you'd have results. And the way you would get the results is all the ballots would be brought into the county clerk's office, and journalists and ordinary citizens could stand there and watch the vote counters painstakingly take each ballot and tally them. And periodically they would give an update. And by midnight you pretty much had a vote. You had an election. Well, supposedly this electronic stuff speeds things up a little bit, but at the cost of credibility and reliability. Lee went on to say, is a computer hackable? Yes. Are business computers hackable? Yes. Are government computers hackable? Yes. The computers that are easiest to hack are the ones that the owner does not believe are at risk. Why, we have a modern video game voting machine that is almost impervious to hackers. That usually takes about 15 seconds to be disproven. And of course, there's no greater expert on this anywhere in the United States than our friend Brad Friedman. I'm sure he knows about these vote smart systems, and maybe he can allay my concerns. I don't know. Okay, thank you. Thank you for acknowledging my conjuring. Billable Rick said, signal received for Wednesday on the front porch. I have a feeling Billable Rick can be most handy this evening because I have questions. By the way, Steve in New York says, I loved you as the person at Blankenship headquarters for MSNBC. Let me address that for a minute. A lot of the times when I work with them, there's an independent production company, and I just go up to their studios, and they've got a bookshelf with some random law books behind, you know, and it just forms a nice little backdrop, and you sit there at the desk, and you talk into the camera. Well, they were busy, but they did have a team on the ground in Charleston. So I was told to go to, and they gave me, you know, they told me it was going to be at the Marriott Hotel. I figured, okay, this is somebody's party. And they gave me the ballroom number, etc. And so I, you know, merrily, walked from the parking lot into the hotel, took it to the second floor, turned right out of the elevator, turned right around the corner, and then I realized I was coming to the end of the hallway, and the only thing there was a table for the Don Blankenship party by invitation only. name? I'm supposed to be the NBC crew's in here? Oh, yes, go right ahead. Thank you. So I did. And I walked into the room, and the first thing that the first reflected light that entered my ocular orbs was none other than Don Blankenship himself. And he was being buzzed around like bees buzz around that orchid that blooms every 7 years and smells like a corpse by the local media. And there was a room full of invitation-only supporters. And this being prayer meeting Wednesday, I can tell you that, that Baptist Bible-banging upbringing comes in handy sometimes. Because I had no sooner stepped into that room and saw the wet bar over to my left and the big Blankenship banner on the wall, and first thing passed through my mind was the 23rd Psalm. Thou hast prepared a table before me in the presence of mine enemies, and my cup runneth over. I heard it in my head as thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemy. I hope I don't get run over. And so I was there for about an hour, and there was almost more media in the room than there were diehard Blankenship supporters. But after running xenophobic China person ads for a couple of weeks, I was pleased to see that his girlfriend / fiance Mei Ling was there in the room. She was the only Asian in the room, so it was kind of easy to sort that out. And, you know, who cares? The part of this that matters is that he made xenophobia a cornerstone of his campaign, because he's a smart man. He's evil as shit, but he's a smart man. And he made a calculation that there would be a political payoff for him to leverage the racism, bigotry, and xenophobia that flows like a toxic waste stream off of one of his mountaintop removal sites through the Republican Party in West Virginia. And you know what? It did. Now, he came in third. Came in a distant third. But there were still people in West Virginia that said, oh, wants to engage in some... let's be honest, they probably couldn't spell xenophobia if you spotted them the X. But they were like, yeah, I'm going to vote for that guy. I want a guy that's going to protect me from... I want the guy who's affianced to a China person who's going to protect me from the China persons. Because, you know, we got a China person problem here in Merca. And by the way, this is not a distinction without a difference, but the China person that he was going after, namely his wife, Mitch McConnell's wife, Elaine Chao's daddy, the shipping magnate, he's from Taiwan, which sort of indicates that he's not, he's ethnically Chinese, but it's not like he's one of those people that Rush Limbaugh used to call, my friends, I'm talking about the Bill Clinton cronies, the Chi-coms. Uh-uh. Oh, that's well played, Sparky. The turd came in turd. Got a little cowbell for that. But it was a little surprising. But the only thing you can do is stand up and speak your truth. And you can't pull punches just because manifest evil is only 2 or 3 feet away from you. And as the guy who was doing the sound check, and it was a noisy room, but the guy who was doing the sound check said, man, you got a booming voice. I said, well, blame that on my high school drama teacher who taught me to project. Project, Bob, project. And it's habit. But as soon as it was over, I didn't waste any time. I got the hell on out of there. Because I figured if they won, they'd be unbearable, but if they lost, they might get ugly. So on the way out, you know, I mean, didn't have any. I mean, I'm not that kind of West Virginia. I don't feel like I got to take a gun everywhere I go. But, you know, I did pull out the car key and hold it tightly in my hand and sort of put the key end of it through in between my knuckles, sort of like a shiv. And walking out of there felt like a little bit like a John Grisham novel. And I was sort of, you know, just watching over my shoulder. And then you get into the parking garage and the elevator and stuff, and it's, and you know, that's where all the nasty shit really always happens in the John Grisham novels and the suspense things and the cloak and dagger stuff. And, you know, sort of periodically checking to me, I was wearing soft-soled shoes, so I was checking to see if there was any clicking and clacking, because you know, that's a sure sign. There was no basement for me to not go into, so I had that going for me. But I got to the car, got out of there, everything was fine. I was just worried for nothing. And then I got some spiritual advice on the way home. So I stopped at Kroger before I came on up the mountain and got a little bundle of sage and sort of spiritually, you know, cleansed the place and pondered the efficacy of a shower with bleach. But, and, you know, so here we are. Made it. Huh, what an evening. What an evening. But there continue to be ramifications. Now, our buddy Irish Dave says, subject line, not so. The biggest turd won the Dems primary and shit. Voting to confirm Gina the evidence destroyer because he knows more than the U.S. too, also. Look, I know Joe Manchin is never going to make, is never going to be anybody's model Democrat. What he is, though, is a Democrat that can win in a deeply conservative state. Now, And let me be clear about this, because I talked about it on the air. Back when the Democrats taking control of the Senate looked like a lost cause, without a doubt, I said I was willing to sacrifice Joe Manchin. Or that it wouldn't make any difference if he switched parties and became a Republican. And you know what? If it had stayed that way and the Democrats had continued to have an insurmountable mountain to climb to achieve a Senate majority, my position would not have changed. Look, I'm not a magician, so there's nothing against me telling you how things work. You listen to this program and you know that I have spent a lot of hours working on issues of social and environmental justice for people in Appalachia up in Washington, D.C. And one of the single most frustrating aspects of that, when working on the Senate side, is when Democratic senators, staff members look at you and say, well, that's very interesting. It's terrible that so many people are being poisoned in Appalachia by mountaintop removal, Bob. What does Senator Manchin think of this? And it kind of puts you in the corner because you can't just sit there and lie to them. You have to tell them that Joe Manchin doesn't care how many of his constituents get poisoned. And that he would not lift a finger if he thought that it might somehow displease his masters in the coal industry. Because all you have is your candor. Same thing, you know, same thing I did last night, just candor. And frankly, if there was a Republican in that seat, and if the Republicans had a 60-40 majority or a 65-35 majority, wouldn't matter a hill of beans. It might actually make my work a little bit easier, except for nothing's ever going to happen with that kind of a Republican majority. But that's not where the situation stands now. The single most important vote that Joe Manchin can cast, and he will cast it, is if the Democrats can get 51 or more members of the Senate, or, well, you know, 49 plus Bernie and Angus, and put the control of the Senate in the hands of a Democratic Senate Majority Leader, presumably Chuck Schumer, whom everybody hates too. But I also believe in being, as I mentioned earlier, fair. Don Blankenship is 200 proof evil. But the man has clawed and scratched and gouged and climbed and clung and kicked and stomped for everything he's got. Born down in Mingo County, pretty much dirt poor, worked for everything he got, and has been merciless and ruthless in the pursuit and acquisition of wealth. And that's not all that surprising for somebody who comes from nothing. And he comes from nothing. And now he's a billionaire. Well, the same fairness must be applied to Joe Manchin. The Republicans were perfectly willing to let coal miners, sick and dying coal miners, retired coal miners, who paid into their pensions, the Republicans were perfectly willing to let their health care and their pensions go to hell. But Joe Manchin introduced a bill. He didn't just follow along. He introduced the goddamn bill to save their health care and their pensions. Eventually, their health care was saved, and he's still fighting to try to get protect and preserve their pensions. You have to give him that. When it came time to vote for the for or against the Affordable Care Act, he voted to preserve health care. And, you know, once he actually voted against a Trump nominee in Betsy DeVos. So those who say that there's no difference between Joe Manchin and a Republican, that is unfair. And beyond being unfair, it is untrue. Now, that having been said, I have an unbroken string of never having cast a vote for him in a national office. I think I voted for him for governor once, because the alternative was unconscionable. But I mean, I think we do have to be. We have to be candid and honest in that sort of an assessment. So, you know, Irish Dave, you know, no, Joe Manchin was not the biggest turd. The guy whose wife lobbied for the opioid industry, he's a bigger turd. Don Blankenship, bigger turd. Evan Jenkins, bigger turd. At least from where I stand and look at it. And he does awful things. And I wish West Virginia was the kind of a state that could give us, you know, a diehard progressive, a Jeff Merkley. Or... hell, I guess a Sherrod Brown. But this ain't that. And if Bernie Sanders were running for, or were running for Senate in this state, he'd get trounced every time he tried. West Virginians are not a bunch of liberals. We have some liberal values, and we have been more liberal than we are. But when the religious right decided to start playing politics in this state, well, the people who live in constant dread and fear of going to hell paid attention. Larry has a question. Bob, please, please explain to me from afar watching why the hell the folks of Appalachia worship coal and don't see any of the bad shit that coal does to the earth. Have these folks never put down the banjo and wandered out of Appalachia for a bit? Sure. Sure we have. I love going to civilization. But I also love coming back. There's a lot of things in New York. I love New York City. You know what I can't do in New York City? Be all alone on the lip of a 300-million-year-old, 1,000-foot-deep gorge with the second-oldest river on Earth. Below me, sounding like a whisper, when I know that down there at ground at river level, it's a roar. Can't get that in New York. I don't know. Maybe there's some restaurant in New York where I can get a decent bowl of grits, but I'd have to look awfully hard to find it. Maybe go uptown. Find some there. Way uptown. Every place has things that recommend it. But we get out, Larry. We get out. But it's not that they worship coal. It's not that we worship coal. As I've said before, I have an extremely dysfunctional relationship with my home, my home state. I despise the things we get so desperately wrong. And I adore the things that we get right. I was talking with a friend of mine the other day. His family was part of the hillbilly diaspora to the north, to Cleveland. My family was part of the hillbilly diaspora to the south, to Alabama. And he was talking about how every time that his family, at least once a month, would come down here, They called it going home. No matter how long they lived in Cleveland, it was called going home. And the same thing applied to me. When my parents talked about leaving Alabama and returning to West Virginia to see the old ones, they called it going home. Because no matter how long they were gone, these hills, these mountains, remained home. And it had not a goddamn thing to do with coal. And everything to do with blood. It would be nice, and this state was a more liberal state when there were more good jobs. But the good jobs in the chemical industry are gone. The good jobs in the glass industry are largely gone. Most of the heavy industry that provided good jobs are gone. The silicon furnaces where my father learned to make silicon metal, they're still running, but not much. And a parking lot that used to be full of cars isn't. And regardless of what you think of coal, and you know, I'm the wrong guy to defend that. You make the choice. You've got a high school diploma. That's it. Now, they'll pay you to work in the coal mines, and you might wind up making $125,000 a year after 10 or 15 years in the hole, you know, if you don't get blown up or burned up or buried alive. Or, you know, after 10 years at Walmart, you might wind up making $11.75 an hour. There aren't as many coal jobs as there used to be, but the ones there are, if you can get one, you can make money. And you don't have to have any particular specialized expertise. None of that college book learning. And there aren't just a shit ton of those jobs left in America. They know. Nobody knows better than a hillbilly, Larry, the bad shit that coal's done. Because hillbillies bury the bad shit that coal does. And they call it black lung. And until you've seen someone with black lung die, you don't want to. You don't want to. To see somebody sound of mind, okay of body, whose lungs are just gone, and they die yearning for that next breath. We know. Hillbillies know. Now, as to the politics of it, as much as, coal has a big role to play in it, but so too does religion. Because the other thing we are, and I talked about this last night with Chris, we have a deeply disturbing streak of bigotry and racism in this state. And it runs deep. And it runs broad. And between the bigotry and the religion that props it up, you're going to be hard-pressed to create a progressive movement. So, there you go. I hope that passes for an answer. Kelly asks, wasn't Manchin's primary opponent opposed to mountaintop removal? Yeah, she was. She is philosophically opposed to it. And doesn't have the first idea how to end it. She's really good at going to rallies. And that's not taking away from going to rallies. But it wasn't a campaign, it was a publicity stunt. And by the time all the accountings are in, you will find out that the vast majority of the money went not to candidates or even to the salary that they paid her to be a candidate. And it's legal, okay? I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. She quit her job so that she could run for office. And it is, and that's absolutely legal under federal election law. And so they fundraised for the campaign and used a portion of the fundraising to pay her while she ran. But here's the trick about PACs. I could start something if I really wanted to be an asshole about things. I could start Blankenship PAC, or call it Blanken PAC. And I could put ads on the internet. Donate to Blanken PAC. Do you and maybe you'd see that, and maybe it'd show up as ads inside news stories and stuff. Do you support Don Blankenship? And you click on it and it takes you to Blanken PAC. And I could solicit donations for Blanken PAC. And if somewhere along the way I gave $1,000 or $2,000 to a political candidate, I'd have to list that. But the other thing I can list is the administrative expense of running Blanken PAC. And you can pay the executive director of Blanken PAC what is called a reasonable salary. And when it comes to running PACs, reasonable salaries can get pretty high. And so a PAC can actually be an effective means of just raising money. All the while you're telling people, oh, by God, we've got to elect a bona fide, genuine conservative, blah, 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 and never give a goddamn dime to the campaign. And don't think for a moment that Republicans are the only ones who do that kind of thing. So, do I know for a fact that that's how that's going to play out? No, I do not. Do I suspect it? Yes, I do. Because the group that recruited and supported, at least at one point in time, started out as nothing more than a post office box somewhere in Los Angeles. You know, Los Angeles, West Virginia. Not. And there was a reason that she was constantly on the Young Turks. Because they were intimately associated with that group. Because it was kind of one of their projects. And in point of fact, until the news came out about his earlier propensity for writing blog, arguably misogynistic blog posts, bless his heart, Cenk was one of the people on the board or some operating capacity function of that group. And then they had to boot him off. And I'm trying to just be straightforward about all this and explain how it works. But yeah, she, in broader answer to Kelly's question, she espoused basically Bernie's platform. And where Bernie was able to leverage it to win all 55 of West Virginia's counties in the Democratic primary, in a situation where you know that the Republican opponent is going to savage, whether it be Joe or somebody else, the Democratic nominee, and that money will flow like a filthy river of feces into West Virginia on behalf of the Republican candidate for Senate, I suspect that 71% of West Virginia Democrats who voted in the primary realized that she would not have a snowball's chance in hell if she were to get the nomination. Because all she'd have to do, that sooner or later, somebody would say, well, how do you feel about the poor, precious little fetuses? And she'd say, I believe in a woman's right to choose. Murderer! Baby killer! Baby eater! And it would be over. Because that's the way the politics are around here. Larry responds and says, my grandmother's from West Virginia until she moved here as a child. Until she passed a few years ago, she was still getting these dividends every couple of years from coal mining back there. It was only a few bucks, but I could never understand where or how it came about. I totally hear you about the home feeling, as I feel the same way about the area of Oregon that I'm from. Love you, brother, and thanks for doing all your hard work behind the religious enemy lines. We call it behind the cornpone curtain here. Meanwhile, going back to the distinctions between like New York and Appalachia, Steve in New York says, New York City serious cons. Here's something else about New York. You can be anonymous if you choose. You can be any individual if you choose. However, the flip side is that there can be a very powerful, even stifling level of loneliness. Anonymity can all too easily turn to indifference. In addition, solitude in a place like West Virginia can be much easier because it's much easier to establish a real connection between a person and mountains, trees, rivers, and endless skies than it is between a person and endless concrete. And I have no doubt of that whatsoever. You've got to make deliberate efforts to have something more than superficial human contact. I get that. The churches are part of it. Yeah. Meanwhile, note coming in from Earther. Don Blankenship, bigger turds, less calories. Well, there went somebody's dinner. Thanks, Earther. So, you know, that's just my attempt to explain some of the dynamics that were at work yesterday, and some of which may continue. You know, the law in this state, thanks to a candidate a couple of years ago named Eric Wells, he lost a Democratic primary, and then he said, well, screw that, I'll run as an independent. And the Supreme Court of West Virginia said, no, you can't do that. You don't get multiple bites of the apple. You can't just run off and, no. Ah, but here's the rub. You can accept another party's nomination. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, I fully expect Manchin's primary challenger to be offered the Mountain Party. That's your Steiny Party in West Virginia. I fully expect her to be offered the nomination. If I'm wrong, I'll be wrong, but that's the way I'd be betting if I was betting. And Blankenship's got enough money to form his own party. Or he could be offered the Libertarian nomination, or the Constitution Party nomination, or the Coal Party nomination, whatever. This still has the potential to be a real damn mess. Or a mighty fine soap opera, depending how you pursue your entertainment. And yes, Irish Dave, she did get more Democratic votes than big opioid Morrissey got from the devotees of God's own party. She did. But the thing is, there were also more candidates. And Republicans who stayed home for the primary will turn out in droves for the general. So there's that. It is far from a foregone conclusion. Okay, I've blathered on enough. Thank you very kindly to Joseph for becoming a new subscriber. Much obliged. We had one subscriber fall off, so that makes that up. Thank you very kindly. And because it came in today, that means we're down to only $600 to raise to finish out the week, and so that, I'll be able to do the traveling I have to do and not sweat bullets. So let's fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. You, of course, are welcome to participate. We are still $15 away from meeting Steve in New York's challenge, and that'll take us down to only $560 to go if we can raise another $15. Thank you very kindly indeed, Steve, and hopefully folks who will respond to it. Thank you, Steve. Irish Dave asking, you just have to ask your own self, would you rather vote for someone you want and not get her, or someone you don't want and get him? That's a false choice, Dave. Like I said, I'm an American first and a West Virginian second. And I want a Senate majority that can slow, if not stop, the madness of this president. And so your dichotomy there, my friend, is false. The question is, does West Virginia want a Republican in that seat, or a Democrat in that seat? Does West Virginia want somebody in that seat who will vote for Mitch McConnell for Senate Majority Leader, or someone who will vote for Chuck Schumer? As odious and Wall Streety as he is, you know, even Bernie will vote for Chuck Schumer for Senate Majority Leader. And Joe won't jump ship, because Joe will get himself a real tasty chair out of it. Maybe Senate Natural Resources or Senate Environment and Public Works. Doesn't make life any easier for the work that my colleagues and I do, for a fact. Anyway, it's 9 minutes past the hour. Let's take a break and get the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable fired up. Again, if you want to participate, you're mighty welcome to. Just send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunk, Sparky Dunk, one word, and he'll get you right into the thick of things. And maybe during the break, we'll get that next $15 in and knock down Steve's challenge and start working our way south from $560. And that would be mighty helpful. Because, again, to be fair, it's a lot more fun to do this when the wolf ain't at the door. And it would be nice to kick his ass clean out in the pasture. All right, then. Break time. And we'll see where the conversation takes us when we come back. Prayer meeting Wednesday on the front porch. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Beautiful place in the world, and
song called The Most Beautiful Place in the World from a lot of years back now. Wow, 14, 15 years back now. It's called Moving Mountains from Aurora Lights Music, and I still listen to it. It is 16 minutes past the hour, and it is prayer meeting Wednesday on the front porch. And let's run over and check in with Sparky. Sending a little video right now. He's enjoying the afternoon sunlight. Yeah, I see you. He's kind of got his back to us. He's enjoying the afternoon sunlight out in out falling on the pasture. And you said, Sparky, that you're going to take a little drive here maybe this weekend?
I might put it off till next year, until my stepson gets here.
Ah, the good father and stepson kind of trip.
Yeah, and Judy wants to go too.
Good for Judy.
She wants to check out some of the edibles.
Yeah, you know, the last...
is just the swather has just been through the pasture this morning.
Oh, yeah? Well, you seem to have the hang of getting around in the scooter chair there pretty good.
Well, yeah, it's a comfortable chair too.
That helps. But no, I guess we can tell people you're going to go and visit a dispensary.
Yes.
And
Lake City.
Sparky sent me a link with the names of some of the stuff there, and there was one that just jumped right off the menu at me. Sour banana sorbet.
Wait a minute. It's sherbet.
Oh, is it sherbet? Okay, well, whatever. Yeah.
Your eyes must have wanted you to see sorbet.
Well, it could be. Okay, sherbet, sorbet. They're pretty much the same thing. It's just depends on how highfalutin you want to feel about it. But sour banana, man, that's an intrigue. That's really intriguing. It's kind of like what happened last night when I stopped at Kroger to get the sage to do the spiritual cleansing of the place when I got back. Lo and behold, I saw something in a grocery store in West Virginia I have never seen before, and that was yellow watermelon. And I got a container of that and brought it home, and I mean, it didn't last a minute. Oh, it was sweet and good. I love yellow watermelon.
I don't think I've ever seen it.
It's something I grew up in the South with in the South.
Well, we get the like rattlesnake melons, they call them. They're striped.
Yeah, and the really long ones.
Yeah, basically. That's mostly what our stores sell.
I've gotten yellow watermelon at Trader Joe's in the L.A. area. Hey, guys.
It's real sweet, isn't it, Rick?
Oh, it's good, yeah. Good stuff.
But mainly I had to have the sage just so that I could smudge the place and get all the, you know, I burned it in a bowl and just sort of took the smoke and drew it toward me just to kind of wash the evil all off. And I mean, honest to God, you know, if I'd been playing journalist, or more importantly, probably anthropologist, I might have, stuck microphones in people's faces and said, you know, does the xenophobia not even bother you? And then stuck the microphone and then put the microphone and had them say, Xena, what? The China person thing. And then stick the mic back in their face. But, again, we're talking about Blankenship, who once threatened to shoot a camera crew for not doing anything except being a camera crew.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah, well, you only had two minutes and 25 seconds or something like that.
Yeah, but it was in the room for a freaking hour.
I didn't see your appearance, Bob. I wish I'd been there. So let me ask you this. Did Blankenship's what did he get, around a little under 20%? Did his numbers go up or down as after he had that China people ad blasting for a week?
It's tough to tell because the polling was not very good in this state. But at one point in time, the Republicans were shitting kittens with crocheted tails because there were a couple of internal polls that showed him in the lead at 31%.
Wow. So he obviously underperformed seriously then. He got like what, just a shade over 19, I thought? Or
Yeah. But okay. But there was one previous poll a few weeks ago that said he was at like 13, 16.
Hmm. Okay.
But again, I would, you know, until he says otherwise, that man never stops scheming, Rick. And he hasn't stopped scheming. And he still and he still has, you know, grandiose ambitions. But you'd be surprised the number of times I feel, well, email, whatever, fielded questions about how can a convicted felon run for Senate in West Virginia? There's a bunch of people that think he's a convicted felon. He's not.
Everybody is saying that. Even Norman said that. Randy Rhodes said that. He's a convicted misdemeanant, I guess you'd call it, right?
Right. And the distinction you have to draw is that he was charged with two crimes. One was the felony of ripping off shareholders. That's a felony. That's a federal felony, by God. If you rip off the shareholders, they will put your ass away as a felon. On the other hand, if you just if you just monkey around with some you know, safety regulations that keep miners from getting incinerated, well, and then some miners get incinerated, 29, that's just a misdemeanor. Because in the infinite wisdom of Congress, incinerating coal miners isn't a felony.
Right. I mean, he seems like the most amoral cat I've ever seen, Bob. I mean, just the way he comes across. It's like, it gives me the song Freud, you know?
Oh, you know, well, I was kidding with somebody last night, and I said, you know, there were Nazis at Nuremberg that would look at Don Blankenship and go, "Very evil, but not." I mean, him? Mm-mm, no, we want nothing to do with him. He's a bad man.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he also engineered that whole, you know, he got the Supreme Court justice elected so that, you know, he ousted a sitting Supreme Court justice so he could get a good result for one of his companies, right?
Right, and not just any Supreme Court justice, but a good Supreme Court justice who had a strong track record of standing up for hurt people and hurt workers and people who'd been ripped off and otherwise shit on.
Mm-hmm.
And they had he had to get him out of the way.
Yeah,
and the thing that wasn't covered 14 years ago was the fact that the young man that the whole case centered around had been repeatedly raped as a child.
Oh man!
And then he in turn offended, and the court convicted him of it, and the Supreme Court, with that particular justice concurring, said he's a young man. We like to hope that young people have a chance of rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. So they gave him another chance. And he reoffended. And then to hell with him. But Don Blankenship rode, because that's the thing, he wasn't just an offender. Don Blankenship rode a child rape victim to victory in a Supreme Court race.
Wow.
And
wow.
That's what that is. I mean,
yeah.
By the way, I got to share a couple of notes along the way. Steve in New York said, I support you 1,000%, you know, as a sycophant. The house is burning, and we can't be worried about the wallpaper or the prize-winning roses in the garden. Meanwhile, our buddy Irish Dave said, I wish I could claim credit for that statement or that question first raised by Eugene V. Debs, the one about voting for somebody you want and not getting him. versus voting for somebody you don't want and getting. Yeah. Maybe the better question now, says Irish Dave, is which preserver of capitalism will you choose? I don't think either one of them are preservers of capitalism because capitalism eats itself. And neither one of them seems much inclined to regulate capitalism. On the other hand, you know, Eugene V. Debs, a man whom I respect, said that, but Eugene V. Debs got more votes as a socialist than any other third-party candidate up until, what, John Anderson or maybe Ross Perot or whoever? But the bottom line is he didn't win anything. He never won anything. But what they did do is they managed to persist in their activism until some of their central tenets were adopted by one of the two mainstream political parties, and that's how we got Social Security. And that's generally how stuff works here. By the way, we are at the halfway point of the program, and I have some potentially happy news to report. Charlene in Rhode Island just wrote in and said, here's a $100 challenge. I'll add another $100 if we can meet the challenge. I hope you can go and be with your family, say goodbye to your aunt, and not have the wolf gnawing at your door. I cannot thank you enough, Charlene. Thank you so very kindly. That's so sweet and so kind. And just being able to go away and, you know, have everything squared away here would be tremendous. So if anybody will help to meet Charlene's challenge, she'll double your money up to $100, and then she'll double it again if we meet the challenge. Plus, there's another $5 to go on Steve's challenge. So we could wind up going from 610 down to 310, and that's a lot more manageable and a lot more helpful. So thank you, Charlene, and hopefully your challenge will be answered.
Hey, Bob.
Go ahead, Sparky.
Can I give a shout-out to Irish Dave?
Yeah, sure.
Also known as Stockton Larry in the old chat room. Come on back to the new chat. Pick you out a new screen name. Nobody will know who you are.
Yeah, it works, and it works real good. Yeah, I don't know about you, Sparky, but the only downside to the new chat room is the fact that, like, when a...
Like?
The only downside for me is that when a private message opens, you can't do anything with it. You can't move it off to one side or anything like that, and you've either got to respond to it or get rid of it.
No, that's the way it is. Don't talk to me. Ace is the...
Yeah, and Asa did it. Asa did a great job in finding it, but
I got the controls back to the old chat room a few days after.
What did they ever tell you what happened?
No, I can't. I mean, the sign in and everything is the original sign in that John Fox started. That's why I thought he may have zapped it.
Yeah, and the weird thing is, I checked in and he didn't.
Well, it came back, but it was after this subscription was done, so I didn't renew it.
Yeah, well, I think it's more or less on the, because of the Java, it was more or less on the way out the door, so, but yeah, that whole thing is just a mess, and John and I are trying to get it sorted out, and hopefully eventually we will. So what direction are we looking in? Am I looking in? I know we're talking about a video on the radio, but where am I looking toward there?
You're looking north.
Okay, so...
Toward the ranch, and then you can see the big oak tree.
Yeah,
out the north door.
So north, Oregon is somewhere yonder.
Yeah, well, if people...
Is that towards the cow pastures, that the direction we're looking in, Sparky, out of your man cave?
If it was wintertime, I could see the top of Mount Shasta out that door.
Okay.
Just the very top.
Okay.
But when the tree grows, like the leaves come back on the tree, I can't see it anymore.
Looks like a lovely day out there in God's country there, Sparky.
It's 82 degrees. I was supposed to be high 83. Yesterday it was 90. It fluctuates all during May. It goes up and down. Where I was sitting.
So what's the humidity like?
Well, I think it was like 30% today.
Yeah. Yeah, we got up to it's actually 81 in the Fabulous Horn Studio right now. And it got right warm. And I can always tell when the humidity goes up because I'm not trying to be gross or anything. I can sweat standing still.
And yeah, but when it gets hot here, the humidity goes way down.
One of these days, I got to experience that. The only time I ever got close to that was 114 degrees in Vegas that one summer.
Well, that's what it's like.
And like, if a little sweat pops out on your forehead, it's just gone immediately.
Well, kind of. It evaporates pretty quick if you're out in the sun. I mean, we could never work out the heat like that in the afternoons. I mean, if we had some afternoon work to do on hot days, we'd start at 5:30 in the morning and start at the crack of dawn.
Oh, that's the way it was that one summer that I worked on the archaeological dig down in southwest Tennessee.
Most of our summer hours were 6 to 2:30.
Well, it got so hot and the humidity was running up in the 90s that if you were out in the afternoon sun after, say, you know, noon, you were just courting disaster. Because the ground was all very low and the air wouldn't, I mean, the air would stagnate. It wouldn't move. And so you'd wind up gasping. So we'd be done by, you know, we'd be done by noon. And that made for some very interesting evenings on the dig. Oh, and by the way, Brother Deacon Asa tells me that the coders are working on it as far as the message function inside the chat. He says, I'm guessing they'll slowly release some updates that'll take care of the problem. Let's hope so. Let's hope so. Hey, Rick.
Yeah.
I did. I was looking forward to talking to you this evening because I wanted to tap into your expertise because these financial things just kind of had Ask Rick written all over them.
Oh, you mean with Michael Cohen and all?
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
I mean, just what limited knowledge I have, I was looking at it and thinking, Avenatti may be right. This smells like a sure enough, no kidding mess.
Yeah, it does. Apparently, this EC Consultants entity was created like a day after the non-disclosure agreement was signed with Stormy Daniels. Okay, Cohen created it a day after. This is in October of 2016, so it would have been like October 17th of 2016. Is when he created this EC Consultants, and that was the corporate vehicle by which she was paid the $130,000. It turns out that after the election, in like the first 10 months of 2017, he apparently was paid $1.25 million of consulting fees. It was deposited or paid into this EC Consultants account. And 500,000 of that was from a Russian oligarch. And so this has all the trappings of a classic pay-to-play scheme, Bob, I think. And the thing is, Cohen's only, he had no expertise as a lobbyist. The money was directed to EC Consultants because, you know, even companies like AT&T paid into this, paid this company, and they were basically trying to buy access to Trump because Cohen was known as Trump's personal lawyer, and so obviously this money wasn't with regard to any legal services that Cohen rendered. It clearly was because of his access to Trump, and so he failed to register as a lobbyist. you know, as a domestic lobbyist, and he also failed to register as a foreign lobbyyist.
Well, let me ask you this.
So there's a couple more federal charges there.
Is there any opening for RICO exposure anywhere in here?
Yeah, you got to have like kind of a pattern or practice of, you know, doing this. This is more of a, I think it's more of a classic pay to play, you know, scheme myself. At least that's the sense I get, you know?
Well, I know pattern and practice is part of it, and I was just wondering if maybe, you know, three different companies and what appears to be an obvious conspiracy with a foreign entity might rise to that level.
Yeah, it might. It might. I think to the extent that there's like a concerted scheme to pay off, you know, women in order to avoid disclosure of damaging information as to Trump. I mean, that could be regarded as, you know, as some kind of a pattern or practice, I suppose. But he's in a world of trouble. And, you know, the Trump administration is as well. I mean, whether anything's ever going to come of it, you know, is another question, you know?
Well, that very obviously is another question.
Mm-hmm.
But is this another one of those situations where the status quo is nothing happens? Whose jurisdiction does this fall into, in your opinion? Does it fall into Mueller's, or does it fall into the Southern District of New York?
Well, geez, it's hard to say, Bob. Probably because of the connection to the Russian oligarch, probably into Mueller's lap. But it could also be, you know, explored by the Southern District of New York, you know, is my guess.
Well, that's the, you know, there is Russian involvement here.
Yeah.
And so that sounds like Mueller. Mm-hmm. But it's Michael Cohen in New York in the conservatory with the candelabra, so it sounds kind of Southern District in New York, too.
Yeah, plus Mr. Muster was involved, right?
Colonel, damn it. He didn't spend all those years in the military for you to call him Mr. Mister.
Mr.
Didn't Mueller's team interview nail that Russian as he come in the airport?
They got him off a private jet.
Yeah, you're talking about Fixelberg?
Yeah,
and by the way, just so folks know, the outfit that was part of all of this, that paid Michael Cohen $500,000, and I don't know what that was in rubles, but you know,
yeah.
Columbus.
I think you have to ask Ali North what that is in rubles, Bob.
Yeah.
He'll know the answer.
Columbus Nova LLC, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They paid $500,000 to Michael Cohen.
Mm-hmm.
And what Michael Avenatti said is that Columbus Nova is under the control of Viktor Wechselberg. I know, the V thing. Captain, it was terrible. They put things in our ears. And just so folks know, he's worth about $13 billion, and he's a Russian oligarch. Well, alleging that Columbus Nova was a creature of Viktor Wechselberg didn't sit well with Columbus Nova. They issued a press release today. Columbus Nova statement in response to inaccurate media reports. At least they didn't call it fake news. Yeah, you take your wins where you can get them. Columbus Nova is an investment management company solely owned and controlled by Americans. Maybe this is the part where I need to cue up Lee Greenwood.
Exactly, Bob.
After the inauguration, the firm hired Michael Cohen as a business consultant regarding potential sources of capital and potential investments in real estate and other ventures. Reports today that Victor Wechselberg used Columbus Nova as a conduit for payments to Michael Cohen are false. The claim that Victor Wechselberg was involved or provided any funding for Columbus Nova's engagement of Michael Cohen is patently untrue. Neither Victor Wechselberg nor anyone else outside of Columbus Nova was involved in the decision to hire Cohen or provided funding for his engagement. Additionally, and this is the important part, contrary to recent reports, Columbus Nova LLC and Renova U.S. Management LLC, operated under the Columbus Nova umbrella, are not now, nor ever have been, owned by any foreign entity or person. In fact, since its founding nearly 20 years ago, Columbus Nova has been and continues to be 100% owned by Americans. No, that's Dixie. Wait a minute. So here's the problem. They tried to disappear a website, but it didn't disappear real good. From the Columbus Nova, so today, if you were to go to renova.ru, you'd see site under construction. Please try again later. Watch out for a man with umbrella. Unfortunately, there's an archived version of their website from January 2017. You remember January 2017. There was a particularly dark day in American history on, say, January the 20th, 2017. Well, back then, there was a Renova Group structure page at the website that is presently under construction some more. And it says that Columbus Nova is an investment management firm with over $2 billion of assets under management. Founded in 2000, Columbus Nova has offices in New York, Los Angeles, and Charlotte. Columbus Nova has a broad investment mandate, which allows it to invest across all levels of the capital structure, from senior secured debt to common equity. And that's Columbus Nova on the Renova Group website. You know, renova.ru. You know, the company that absolutely does not control or be owned by anybody but patriotic, upstanding Americans. And see, what gets them all worked up is that, Columbus Nova is not run by Victor Wechselberg. It's absolutely not run by Victor Wechselberg, and stop saying that. It's run by Victor Wechselberg's cousin. But I wish I was kidding. But see, they're having a shit hemorrhage, because the sanctions were sanctions were imposed against Victor Wechselberg and, you know, Renova Group.
You as cut a, out there, Bob.
As
you
a result of the sanctions, all U.S. dollar bank accounts of companies controlled by Renova have been blocked. And, yes, Victor Wechselberg has been questioned by Mueller's team. Ta-da! By the way, obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening, courtesy of Lee in New York. The only famous Russian that is not dead and not connected to Trump or his associates is... Pavel Chekhov! Chekhov? Yes.
He was one of the few guys who wore the red shirt who didn't get killed. Same with Scotty. Those two guys, Chekhov and Scotty, were the two guys who wore red who were never killed in Star Trek episodes. Am I right, Bob?
I think you are, yes. By the way, in terms of conversions, Ron in Raleigh points out that $5,000 is 315,305 rubles.
Oh, can we contribute to your program in the form of rubles?
Bob? No, you can't.
Damn.
Not unless you've got 315,305 rubles. Damn it. So let's see. You got to add, multiply that times 100, and that means you got to add two zeros. So that would be 31,530,500 rubles.
Jeez.
To make up $500,000.
Mm.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Sparky.
Can we talk about Michael Avenatti? What is his game? What is he up to? Trying to become the most famous lawyer in America?
Well, it's not going to be bad for business as long as he wins. But the other thing that's kind of interesting here, and I know you're kind of a race fan, Sparky. I've seen a bunch of photos of him lately in, like, you know, race car uniform equipment, togs, gear. You know, with the high-necked uniform with the strap around it. And everything. So I guess he likes to drive automobiles really fast in a semi-controlled circumstance. Maybe he likes to go fast and turn left. So maybe he just doesn't give a shit.
NASCAR, you know what the rumor is for NASCAR, don't you?
No, what?
Going to sell it.
The Frances are going to get out of the business?
That's the rumor. Still a rumor, but it's going around.
God, what would the asking price be on that? I mean, that's the gross national product of several small countries put together.
They were saying the other day forget which one.
Wow.
It'd be in the billions.
But the fact of the matter is, what's Michael Avenatti's game? I think Michael Avenatti is, he got the biggest fraud insurance judgment, medical something, last year in the entire state of California.
Yeah, that was recently reduced to about $20 million on appeal, Bob.
Damn it!
Or maybe the trial judge reduced it to $20 million. You know, the rule of thumb is that your punitive damages can't be more than, let's say, 10 times what your actual damages are. Generally, that's kind of a rule of thumb the U.S. Supreme Court has kind of created.
Yeah, and that's a bunch of bullshit because then they're not punitive damages anymore.
Well, that's true. That's true. It doesn't hurt the defendant. That's the whole idea behind punitive damages, to deter that, let's say, antisocial conduct on the part of large corporations.
Exactly. So, yeah, that makes it a little less than effective, but...
Yeah, $20 million is still pretty good.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going to be on beans and rice, but, and you know, that... That'll still pay for a decent little fleet of race cars too. But the thing is, he is well schooled in fraud. And I don't know what I'd like to know, and I don't know if there's any way of knowing it, is who put Stephanie Clifford, aka Stormy Daniels, onto him? How did they get together? Somebody. There's some chess going on. At the same time that, you know, I mean, Avenatti's playing chess, and you know, Trump and Giuliani are playing dirty go fish.
Yeah, they're like playing some form of Chinese checkers, the rules of which I don't really understand, as you know. I guess a 2 or 3 year old created the rules.
Have you been keeping up with your favorite morning show?
Some, but I slept in this morning. I was exhausted. And, were they having a fit today?
Well, I keep seeing Mika having a fit about the damn DVD he's supposed to have. What are you going to review what's on the DVD?
Oh, she can get a little annoying from time to time. I did catch her, I think it was yesterday, when she said, or maybe it was today, she said, and there's nothing on the DVD. Well, do you know that? That's just a little petulant as far as I'm concerned, but...
Yeah, what I want to know is what Avenatti's source for all this information is, as far as these bank accounts and, you know, how much, Cohen's entity got paid and, you know, that kind of thing. Apparently, he has the actual bank records.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Somebody's playing a deep game somewhere. Not Derp State, deep game.
No. Yeah.
And one of the things, regrettably, that I got to thinking about, although the fact that AT&T and Novartis and that Korean company all went, yeah, we did it. Okay, you got us.
Yeah.
I remember back when Karl Rove, Turd Blossom, used to play the kinds of games. Well, I mean, he was his hands were all over the dirty trick that got played to get rid of Dan Rather.
Mm-hmm. Right.
To feed believable information and cultivate it until it was time to spring the trap and claim that it wasn't real. Oh, by the way, we got to keep up with the ongoing obligatory Star Trek reference. Lee points out, sorry to disagree, Scotty was killed by the changeling, but the unit Scott was repaired. Chekhov was shot and killed before the gunfight at the OK Corral, but that one was probably hallucination. so even they didn't escape the fate of the red shirt. But Randy in PA says, I thought Chekhov wore gold. Scotty wore red, and so did security. But I thought Chekhov moved up to gold. I think Lee will know. Lee will know.
Okay. Well, Spock died at some point in time as well, so he wore a blue shirt, as we all know.
True. Oh, by the way, Irish Dave says Avenatti races them sissy sports cars like some European. And he refers to her as, and Mala Norma can be plagiarized in several languages.
Be best, y'all.
Be best, blah.
God, geez. Oh,
I'm still
God.
Waiting for her to introduce her Just Say No to Garlic campaign.
Why is there for vampires in the White House?
No, I think melanoma is a vampire.
Oh.
You know, it's some sort of...
I heard a rumor today she's living with her parents.
You know, there are lots of rumors, and she's... There's a part of me that wants to have some level of sympathy, but there's another part of me... And that part of me, like, feels sorry for her when she's, like, slapping his nasty little sausage-like fat little fingers away. But there's another part of me that remembers that she was more than happy to slime Barack Obama and then sits there at Barbara Bush's funeral next to him just laughing and carrying on. Of course, it wasn't lost on me that when you saw the whole photograph, Michelle was sitting on the other side, and if looks could kill, melanoma would have gone away in a basket. Yeah.
But what is it about? They got to trot her out every so often and plagiarize something from the Obama.
Yeah, it's what you got. I mean, she speaks six languages, but there's a big difference between speaking them and writing them. You know, spoken language is what we learn earliest as infants, but then you have to be taught the rules of how to write it. And the one is simpler than the other. Hey, coming up on the top of the hour, I've got some very good news. I got a note just a little bit ago from Darlene in Connecticut. She said, "I'll do it. Darlene will meet Charlene's challenge. Rhode Island and Connecticut unite." Thank you, Darlene. Thank you so much. So Charlene's challenge has been met. And it was actually met twice because Silent R. Lamar jumped in. And then Roberto finished off Steve in New York's challenge, and then some. So the situation as it now stands is mirabile dictu, miraculous to say. We've got like $130 to go to finish Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and then, you know, Thursday and Friday are just Thursday and Friday and can't be helped. But $130 to go. Thank you to Charlene. Thank you to Darlene. Thank you to Roberto. Thank you to Larry. Thank you to Joseph. Thank you one and all for getting us that close. Maybe in the next hour or so we'll knock down the other $130, and that would be tremendously helpful. So that's extremely good news. Extremely good news.
So, Bob, my condolences on your aunt.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Sorry to hear about that. Have you told folks about a little bit about her in the program?
No, I thought best not to. I mean,
okay.
It is sufficient to say that she lived a very, very rich and very, very full life, and she will be missed. But she got everything out of life. She wrung it dry.
So she was your mom or your dad's sister?
She was my mother's sister-in-law.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Okay.
My mother's brother passed away a few years ago, and then she soldiered on for a few more.
How old was your aunt? She passed.
94.
Wow, that is a good long life. Jeez.
So you're driving to Alabama?
No. Driving to Virginia.
Oh. You said the other day it was like a 9-hour drive.
No, it's 8. Virginia's a big...
8-hour drive to go to Virginia?
Yeah, Virginia's a big state.
God, the roads must be horrible.
No, just long.
Can't get there on a straight line.
No. I mean, you got to get over the Allegheny Front, and you got to get over the Blue Ridge. It's either up, over, or around.
I was thinking Alabama, you might be able to get some of your favorite hot dogs.
No, but I did make a batch of the slaw, so I've been sort of getting by as best can get by.
Hey, how's the weed whacking going, Bob? Have you gotten out there into the...
Yeah, a little bit. It's rained so damn much in the last couple of weeks. I mean, you kind of got to have dry. You got to have a little bit of dry to really make a dent in it.
Right.
But there will be... I'm looking forward to it in a big way. And I had actually a little bit of a plan. I don't know. Some of it may come to fruition, but I'm still trying to finish off bits and pieces of it because there are still repairs. I'm making them as I'm able. Going all the way back to the great derecho of 6 years ago.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Because FEMA was useless. But there's one thing, and you know, if you ever want to throw a party in central West Virginia, there is one fact that has stood the test of time. If you want to have a June wedding in this part of West Virginia, or if you want to have a big outdoor gathering, picnic, family reunion, whatever, you choose the first Saturday in June. It might rain a little in the morning. It might rain a little bit in the evening. But generally speaking, even if there's cloud cover, the first Saturday in June is reliably dry. I don't know why it works out that way, but it does. And so I had hoped to sort of have a gathering over here for the first Saturday in June. I don't think we're, but, you know, maybe the first Saturday in June next year. Because there's still so much to be done. And, you know, 81-year-old house now that has seen a lot and needs a lot of work. But, you know, progress.
Yeah, you've got me beat by a few years. My house was built in 41, so.
Yeah, I've got you by 4 years.
Okay, yeah.
And you don't have any repairs?
I don't have a lot of repair. I mean, I got like a door that I got to fix and a gate in the back and stuff. But when I bought it like about 5 years ago, it was like redone. They put all new paneling, you know, all new paneling on it, or what do you call it, on the outside of the house, the siding, I guess.
Yeah, siding.
And they redid the floors and, you know, kind of put all new appliances in. And so it was really nice. It still is. But I mean, it doesn't look like an old home either outside or inside. And then there's, you know, nice little features. It's got the old, we used to burn our garbage in LA County. And so there's an old, incinerator in the back, you know, the brick and stuff. And, but it's, been cemented in. I should probably dig the cement out and, you know, kind of create just like a little, you know, fireplace back there, you know, and it's got like a nice English garden and a back patio where you can just kind of sit around and underneath like a little awning. So it's actually pretty nice.
We just had the floors redone in our bathrooms with a toilet seat.
Okay.
By a 75-year-old plumber and an 86-year-old carpenter.
Oh.
Wow. That's a lot of experience. There is not a truly square corner in this entire house, I don't think.
Well, my plumbers, they never set the toilet rings. They weren't set right to the floors.
Oh, you mean like the beeswax things?
No, the metal ring. It's old transite, but it's like old metal pipe. 3-inch, and they didn't set the ring that the toilet sits on, you know, where the bolts come out of. They didn't set those right to the floor right. So, and the house was built in 1957. So anyway, he fixed both of them. He leaded them in. Had to use lead. The old school plumbing. And then I had some leftover floor tile that my mom and dad kept around for years and years for when they retiled the bathrooms, and had just enough to do the one bathroom, but not enough to do the other. So right with the back where the toilet sits, it's got a different floor tile on. It works now. No, the toilets were rocking. They were unstable. And they leaked over the years.
So I guess every time you go, you have an earthquake, more or less, right, Sparky?
No, not really. The one bathroom is really bad, but
yeah,
they're rock hard now. And they had to rip the whole one bathroom. They had to rip the top floor out and the subfloor, because my house built above the ground and everything on pier block.
Same here. Everything's built on foundation piers.
Well,
and there are a couple of places that are already got, you know, house jacks under them. But, you know, in West Virginia, the land is constantly moving because so much of West Virginia is undermined. Which reminds me, in a grand display of the manifest power of the goddess of irony, the sinkhole that opened up in front of Mar-a-Lago. Everybody saw that, I presume.
I heard about it. I didn't see any pictures.
Was that recently? I thought that happened a while ago.
No, that was last few days, according to what I saw. 16-square-foot sinkhole.
Jeez.
Well, it's Florida, after all. It's going to start sinking.
Ah, by the way, Ron and Raleigh says, hey, Sparky and Bob, it's the toilet flange. Okay. I didn't know that. There's so
much.
I
know what it's called, but I didn't.
There's so much for me to learn, and I learned so much of it on this program. I eventually would like to, wow, the things we talk about here. You know those, the ones that seem, it's like they've got pressurized air behind them or something. It just, whoosh, you know, and everything's gone. I want one of those.
Oh, waterless toilet?
No, it's not waterless. I mean, there's water there, but it seems like there's some, it's just fast and powerful.
Sounds like it has an electronic eye on it, so when you get off the toilet, it flushes.
No, that's not them. I mean, these just usually have, instead of having a handle, they've got a button in the middle of the tank, of the top of the tank, and you just push the button down.
Well, all the new fang-dangle toilets that we did, I mean, before I retired, working buildings and stuff, had that. The eye behind the toilet that saw you when you got up off of it and flush itself. Or the urinal will flush itself when you moved away from it.
So it's 8 minutes past the hour. Just to go over a few other things that did we catch the arrest of George Zimmerman story?
I've read vaguely about it, that he threatened to feed this guy to alligators or something like that. Is that right?
Yeah, and got charged with stalking.
Oh, okay, good.
And he's only 34 years old.
Mm-hmm. Zimmerman is?
Yeah. A guy was, an investigator was working on a documentary about the killing of Trayvon Martin.
Mm-hmm.
And Zimmerman made a total of 55 phone calls, 67 text messages, 36 voicemails, and 27 emails.
Jeez.
That boy ain't right in the head, Bob.
What a psycho.
At one point he said, I know how to handle people who fuck with me. I have since February of 2012.
Oh, jeez.
So the Seminole County, Florida Sheriff's Office said, probable cause exists to show that Zimmerman had in fact used electronic communications to send threatening and harassing communications, and charged him with aggravated stalking.
Mm.
Couldn't happen to it. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
He needed to be locked up before he hurt somebody up.
Yeah, I mean he's skated so much. I know there was some domestic violence that he was charged with, but I don't think he ever served any time for that. You know, threatening a couple ladies with guns. You know, if memory serves. You know, this guy's like a psycho. You know.
So here's a question. Is Rudy Giuliani doing something that is actually a calculated strategy, or is he just gone?
I think it's the latter.
I mean, billable Rick, yeah. I mean, is there anything that he is doing that as a lawyer representing a client you would ever even think about doing?
No, unless he's trying to play the... you know, kind of like that crazy mob boss who pretended he was mentally incompetent and would wander around in pajamas in public and stuff like that. And his only mistake was talking to Sammy the Bull Gravano, a younger guy, and another younger mobster. And so they ended up putting him away because, you know, they were able to, you know, convince the, you know, feds that the guy, you know, was competent, you know. But, yeah, I don't really, I mean, he seems to me like your crazy uncle who watches Fox all the time, Fox News all the time, Bob. I don't see any strategy or any overarching, no overarching strategy that he's employing, you know.
Well, yeah, because none of it makes sense.
No, it doesn't.
I mean, no. And some of it sounds. What was his name? Sam something. Remember when he was melting down a few weeks ago, and one of the people interviewing him said, "Have you been drinking? I smell alcohol."
Nunberg, I think.
Yeah, Sam Nunberg, wasn't it?
Yeah,
he was on the beat the other day.
And you know, no. Well, aren't there some aspects of what Giuliani's out there babbling about that sound just a little bit like Thanksgiving Day after cranky old Uncle Fox has been into the, been into the eggnog a few too many times?
I'd say so, yeah. Yeah, I mean, maybe that's why he keeps getting divorced, you know? He can't stay married very long, you know? Giuliani, I call him. You know? Yeah, I mean, I think he's going senile as well, as is Geezer Disgustus is, you know?
Oh, I mean, what, is he going to be out in 10 days the same way that the Mooch was? Has he been there for 10 days yet?
He's already exceeded the Mooch.
Yeah, the Mooch.
The Mooch.
Oh, jeez. Oh. I mean, the guy clearly, nobody in the right mind wants to work for Trump just because, you know, everything around him, everything he touches dies, you know?
Turns to shit, you get Trump shit all over you.
Exactly. Exactly.
And there's no loyalty.
No, well, there is loyalty, but it flows to Trump.
Yeah, you're just cannon fodder.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you know, how must Michael Cohen be feeling? They got after Sarah Sanders, Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags,
mm-hmm.
during the press briefing,
mm-hmm.
Otherwise known as the Lie of the Day show. The Sarah,
yeah, right.
You know, Sarah, you know, if there was somebody really creative out there, they would take the old Hall and Oates tune, Sarah Smile.
Oh, jeez.
And turn it into Sarah Lies.
Mm-hmm.
But they got after her the other day, and when they started asking her about the whole pay for play thing, she said, mm-hmm. "It has nothing to do with the White House."
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's Michael Cohen going, "Never knew the underside of a bus looked like this. Damn, it's pretty interesting."
Yeah. Right.
A lot of road grime down here. A lot of old diesel grease and stuff. Son of a bitch. How did I get under here? Huh? Auntie M?
Michael who?
Yeah, right. Never heard of the guy.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, about 6 feet tall, 190, smokes cigars, has a plaid, navy plaid sport coat. Yeah. Never heard of him.
Yeah, exactly.
The coffee boy in Trump Tower.
Well, there you go. Yeah, right, yeah. That's right. Yeah, he was the coffee boy.
So where'd the rest of the money go, Rick?
I have no idea. Maybe he purchased some real estate or something, Bob.
Well, I mean, we got $130,000 to Stormy. We got $130,000 to. Why can I never remember
the McDougal?
Huh? Yes.
McDougal?
Yeah. So that's 260.
Yeah.
I read some speculation somewhere that maybe the pregnant playmate that got the 1.3 mil out of Broidy.
Okay.
That
okay.
Maybe Broidy wasn't actually the father.
Oh, my. Wow. Well.
Because, okay, let's take
Michael
our...
Michael Avenatti floated that.
Let's take this one paranoid step further. There's lawyer-client privilege.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also marital privilege.
Right.
And so what if you go to your beloved spouse of 35 or 40 years
mm-hmm.
and you say, honey, we love Donald Trump, don't we? Oh, yes. Yes, we do. So I did something for our friend Donald. Well, how nice. So there's probably going to be a lot of reporter vans here at the house. Really? Yes. Because, see, I said that I mean, we really love him, don't we, honey? Oh, yes, we do. Go, MAGA, baby, MAGA. Come give mama some MAGA sugar. Okay. So, I said that I knocked up a playmate and paid her $1.3 million, but I didn't. But we're going to say we did, and you're going to say you forgive me, and we love each other, and marriage is a union between one man and one woman. And can we do that, sugar?
Part.
Huh?
Don't forget the abortion part.
Well, yes, there was an abortion, but the thing is, honey, we love the precious little fetuses, but I didn't actually buy the abortion. Trump did. And, you know, he can do anything he wants to because MAGA. Oh, honey, I love you so much. You're so devoted to him. You know what? You're making America great again, too. Those two talk about that. Marital privilege.
Yeah.
I mean, it would apply, wouldn't it?
I think so. I don't see that there's any, I don't think there is any crime or fraud exception to the marital privilege. It's actually broader than the attorney-client privilege, Bob, as I recall.
That's what I recalled. And the thing is, it's the person being accused who can claim it.
Mm-hmm. Right. 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 It can only be waived by the person who, you know, it has to be a two-way, you know, they both have to agree to waive it, essentially.
Right.
And there's also a privilege not to have your spouse testify against you as well,
mm-hmm.
which is different than the marital communication privilege. It's similar, but a little different.
So the upshot of that is that all of a sudden, $260,000 goes to $1,560,000. And the next thing you know, you need some Russian money from Wiktor. But you also need you some AT&T cash, and mm-hmm. you need you some Novartis cash, and mm-hmm. some South Korean cash.
Mm-hmm.
And then somewhere along the way, I mean, as with as the line goes from The Godfather Part Two, Michael just gets his beak wet.
Right.
Yeah, meanwhile, James with a note says, Giuliani, this is Donnie trying to find the guy who can spin this just right. Problem is, says James, it can't be done.
Well, let's hope that's from his lips to God's ears, so to speak, Bob. You know? I tend to agree with him.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine having a client like Trump. I mean, what? How do you represent a psychotic? You know, how do you represent someone like that? You know, he changes from moment to moment. You know, and everything's all about him. You know.
Well, how can you represent somebody who absolutely will not take your advice?
Exactly. That too. Yeah, no client control, zero client control.
I mean, if you had a client and you said, listen, the only thing in the world you've got to do is shut your fucking mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And have you ever had to talk to a client like that?
No, I haven't. Not yet. Again, I've only had real clients. I was working for the government for 23 years, so I've only had real clients for maybe almost the last 7 years, 6.5+ years. Okay.
So, but if you tell your client, all you got to do is not say anything. Just say nothing.
Right.
Nothing, like totally nothing. I mean, you can say hi at the drive-thru at McDonald's and stuff like that, but, you know, don't talk about the case.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then before they're barely out the door, you check your Twitter feed and there's your client that you just told to shut the fuck up on Twitter saying, I didn't do it, and anybody who says I do it did it is a goddamn liar, and I'm gonna have him shot. Because we kind of had this conversation at that point in time. Next time you get in front of the judge, Your Honor, get up there. Get sidebar, just us talking in a whisper. No microphones, no PA. Say, could we do that yet, please? And now you've got now that Ty Cobb is on the way out, and what's his name? Emmett something or other coming in. How galling is it for Trump to have the guy who defended Bill Clinton?
Oh, man. Yeah, he must be, like, beside himself.
They brought him in because he is, for all intents and purposes, the movies where after the horrible, bloody, gory killing has gone down, the cleaner comes in with the bleach and the peps and the 2-liter bottles of Coke and,
Right.
Well, this guy's a cleaner.
Oh, speaking of cleaners, you're going to notice that in Breaking Bad.
Lucky for you, I've already gotten past it, okay? That's very close. That is very close to a spoiler. Just don't do it.
Has Mike
Well, I'm glad I did, Sparky. I mean, but yeah.
Hey, has the character Mike made his appearance yet, Bob, or not?
I'm like a couple of episodes into season 3. Stop that.
Okay.
but this Emmett, what's his face?
Flood, I think.
Yeah, has been. He's a cleaner. And the thing is, his specialty is dealing with impeachment.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of a signal. And he did the same thing at his little Clavern rally up in Michigan. That's kind of a signal that Trump expects, A, for the Congress to lose the Congress, and B, for his ass to be impeached. Because see, he name checked Maxine Waters in front of all those highly armed white people in Michigan.
What do you mean he mentioned her? You mean what?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's why we've got to keep the Congress. And I think we're going to keep the Congress because the economy is going so well. When in fact the economy isn't going so well. The unemployment numbers are actually no better than Obama's.
Well, there's some evidence that they're actually rigged. I think you mentioned that, right?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. Like, they don't add up, in other words, you know?
And then on top of it all, we would be remiss if we didn't mention the the American detainees who are returning tonight at 2 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
They are three Americans of, I believe, Korean heritage.
Right. They all have the first name of Kim, I know.
And here's the thing. Isn't at least one of them, maybe two of them, I'm not sure, all three of them, weren't they busted for trying to hustle Jesus in North Korea?
Oh, I don't know what...
Because the admonishment that they got was, don't ever do this again.
Hmm, okay.
And here's the other fun part of that. The plane is going to land at Andrews at 2 a.m., you know, mm-hmm. here in about, 5.5 hours.
Right.
And Meta Mussolini has said, and I'm going to be there to greet them, these three great Americans. Can you imagine, what kind of Dr. Ronnie happy pills is he going to have to be on to even be anything vaguely resembling coherent at 2 a.m.?
Yeah, exactly. Is Dr. Ronnie even there anymore?
No, Dr. Ronnie's gone.
Okay. Dr. Feelgood, geez. You know, we sure miss you, Ronnie. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. You know?
But you know, his pill of choice was the smart drug. I'm sorry, Sparky.
The smart drug. What's that? What's that, Bob?
I forget. We talked about it a week or so ago. It's like a low grade speed that supposedly increases your mental acuity.
Oh, okay, so sort of like taking no dose if you're studying for a bar exam or something like that, or
yeah, only without the part where you're.
When all the military services used for pilots and that kind of stuff.
Without the jitters, I guess.
Yeah, your scalp doesn't crawl around on you.
Okay. All right, so where were we there?
Well, the question is, what's he going to be like at 2 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, well, he's used to not sleeping, so might not be that big a deal for him. You know?
I mean, there's just so much weird out there.
Oh God!
Is it just me, or is Donald Trump's face starting to melt?
To melt?
Well, before we can really answer that, how bad does it look like it's melting to you?
It's getting worse by the day, and the eyes and the bags and the...
Yeah, no, he's changing. He is changing. But I'll tell you what surprised me was when the announcement came out that the new president of the National Rifle Association is going to be Ollie fucking North. I saw a recent photograph of Ollie North. Dude is turning into Pat Robertson before our very eyes.
Hmm. He looks really old. He has not aged well at all, Bob.
The picture I've seen.
You know?
Looks decrepit.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, he'll be talking about demons in fuzzy sweaters in no time flat if this continues. And of course, since he's going to be the president of the NRA, somebody will have to be shot.
Oh, jeez. Maybe Wayne the Peter will have to go, Bob.
No, Wayne the Peter's the vice president. That's the thing.
That's actually higher than the president, isn't it, or not?
Well, the president is largely a ceremonial. And they went with Ollie North because, as Charlie Pierce observed, he's the most famous arms trafficker in the history of the United States.
Right. Yeah. Jeez. Plus the money launderer as well, and the NRA needs a good money launderer, as we know, right? With all those rubles.
He needs a full-on dry cleaning outfit.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, speaking of dry cleaning, Bob, have you gotten... Oh, no. No more spoilers there.
Stop that.
I can't help it.
I'll let you know.
Okay, okay.
He's going to walk us through it when he gets there, Rick.
Okay.
Oh, and by the way, Trump...
can't hurry somebody that's watching Breaking Bad.
The other thing, Trump blamed, at one point, blamed Obama and said Obama had done nothing about these American citizens coming back from Korea, North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a reason Barack Obama didn't do anything about them. they were captured, at least one of them, after Trump became president. And he was just kind of happy to let him sit there and rot in prison.
Yeah, I tell you, what a guy, huh?
And I'm reading an article about, and I'm trying to, something in the back of my mind tells me that these were, Christian proselytizers.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't. Okay. Kim Dong-chul, he was sentenced to 10 years of hard labor in April 2016. So he's been there longest. And he was convicted of spying and other offenses. Nobody knew about it till January 2016. He was an American citizen from Fairfax, Virginia. Tony Kim, also known as Kim Sang-duk, arrested April 2017. He was teaching accounting at Pyongyang University of Science and Technology, a Christian-funded college. And he was arrested trying to get on a plane to get the hell out. And then Kim Hak-song, also arrested May 6, 2017. Again, not on Barack Obama's watch. And he was a volunteer at Pyongyang University of Science and Technology doing agricultural development work.
Hmm.
So, but he became a naturalized citizen in the 90s, then went to China and studied agriculture in Yanbian, and then moved to Pyongyang because, you know, why the hell not? So none of them were, I take it back, none of them were actual Bible bangers. But there was a connection to that Christian, the so-called Christian-funded university.
Mm.
And meanwhile, so those guys are coming home. We've got Americans in Iran whose very existence is put at hazard, because we haven't really mentioned this tonight, by the Carotene Caligula pulling out, and it's the first time that's ever been said about Donald Trump.
Oh, jeez.
Ba-dum-bum. Of the JCPOA. And there are family members in the United States who are worried sick about what's going to happen to their loved ones now. Elise says in regard to the subject line, coherent. Pick any time of day. Would Donald Trump be coherent? No. He can't utter an understandable paragraph that's not on a teleprompter. And that's the thing yesterday with the whole Iran deal thingy. It was entirely scripted, and it was word salad.
No, it made no sense whatsoever. You know, it was clearly written by someone else. Yeah.
Isn't there a large Iranian presence in L.A. area?
Huge. We have a place called Pershing Square in West L.A. right near Westwood. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also Tim in Encino.
Tim from L.A. was freaking out Trump might turn on Iranians and try to come after him.
Well, I don't think
so. Like he's doing every other group.
Well, you know, the thing is, the most of the immigrants have been, you know, the Iranian immigrants have been here, you know, since like right around the revolutionary days, you know, for the most part. Not all, but most of them, I would say. You know, so they're well ensconced here.
Yeah, they're already into second generation.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, they are. Yeah, no, I have a very pretty good friend and acquaintance who's a CPA and an attorney who is Iranian, and you know, boy, I tell you, they cook some really nice food. You know, he's hosted me at a restaurant he likes to go to, really really tasty. It's called The Flame, or just Flame, I guess. And just very, very flavorful food, you know, shish kebabs and the salads and, you know, just the spices they use are really very, you know, very tasty. You would love it, Bob.
Well, speaking
of food, God, you know, my mouth is watering.
Yeah, the lamb is just to die for. It just melts in your mouth, you know, if you like lamb cooked really well, you know, correctly, rather, not necessarily well done, you know, but, you know.
Yeah, not a big fan of shoe leather.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Just the right amount, yeah. Yeah.
Well, speaking of food porn, when Bob said he didn't know about grits in New York, I posted a link in the chat. 15 best places to get grits in New York. What's the thing with shrimp and grits?
Oh, God, shrimp and grits is a low country classic. It's delicious. Ooh. It's really... Go ahead.
Most every place on that list has shrimp and grits.
Mm. Yeah, like so much of the great food traditions of the South, it's poor people food.
Mm-hmm.
Because once upon a time, before we started poisoning all the water, you could go down to the water's edge and just get some shrimp and. Grits are probably the simplest and cheapest form of portable edible corn.
Mm.
But a true low country and somebody like Jim could probably wax philosophical on this. True low country shrimp and grits is elegant and simple and absolutely a flavor riot in your mouth. But grits is just grits. It doesn't take any shrimp. It's warm and filling and sticks to your ribs. And you know, one of the most brilliant things about corn and the New World the Columbian Exchange diet is that you've got foods that have nutrients in them that the European diet did not have. Wheat and barley and oats can't compare to the caloric and nutritional wallop of corn and potatoes.
Mm.
Well, anyway, there's the link in the chat. So next time you go to New York, you can do a tour and give a report back if you ever go.
I'm sure there are places that do it really well. But to this day, one of the best breakfasts I've ever had in my life was that Dominican breakfast there in the Lower East Side. You know, just sat down at the diner counter, and it was something I'd never had before. You know, the fried mashed plantains for breakfast. Talk about a carb and starch load, and then like two eggs on top of all of that, and like I said. I ran the bill up all the way up to $11 because I got a giant fresh squeezed orange juice to go with it. Whoa!
Mm.
But the griddle fried thick slices of salami were just not to be believed. And then the fried cheese. I'd never seen, you know, this wasn't like your TGI Fridays deep fried mozzarella sticks. These were slabs of like farmer cheese.
Mm.
And just gooey and stretchy and kind of rubbery and chewy and whew. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of those places in New York had fried grits.
Oh, fried grits are awesome. Because, see, you can make, and in fact, just the other day, I got a couple of bags, one white, one yellow, of really old-fashioned grits. Because, like, the grits, either the instant grits or the five-minute grits or whatever, they're pre-cooked. They're parboiled. And so that's why they work when you just pour boiling water on them. But old-fashioned grits, you soak them overnight in water like you do beans. And then you drain them, and then you have to cook them and constantly stir, or they will A, stick, and B, lump, and C, suck. But you make your grits, and then you put, like, sharp cheddar cheese to it and stir it up and get it, and then, grease a sheet cake pan and pour them in there. Put plastic right down on top of them, put them in the refrigerator, let them get really, really good and cold and really, really good and stiff. And then you can kind of cut them into what looks like really thick French fries. And you can sort of roll them in flour and then deep fry them. You've never had a better snack in your life.
So that's what cheese grits are.
Well, that's what fried cheese grits are.
I hope that people in the audience aren't starting to chew off their arms at your description of these wonderful dishes, Bob, you know?
Oh, I'm making myself hungry as hell.
Yeah. Good stuff. So, I don't think I've mentioned this. I'm headed to see Weird Al Yankovic for the second time. He's playing at a 2,000-seat old theater called the Ace Theater in downtown L.A. on Friday night, so that'll be fun.
Oh, fun.
Make sure your shots
are up to date, Weird Al. Take your medicine. Billable Rick promises to use his powers henceforward only for good.
There you go.
Still waiting for you to go to that Nugent concert, Rick.
Well, I know that Kid Rock is somewhere in San Bernardino at some point in time, and I'm waiting for the fundraiser from the rest of the Hornistas to go to that, just because, just because. I don't know. I guess, I think I may have mentioned this. Shania Twain made an offhanded comment about how she might have voted for Trump if she were an American citizen. So that got her into some hot water. But I don't think that gets around to my list of hexes to.
Let's not.
No. She seems like a nice lady anyway.
Well, apparently rumors are leaking out that the much awaited news of where the North Korea summit will take place is going to be in one of the more brutal dictatorships in the Asian region. I mean, highly civilized, highly structured, everybody's happy, but Singapore.
Oh, yeah, right. Just don't spit your gum out on the sidewalk there. You'll get like 30 lashes with a cane.
No bullshit. Yeah. You get your ass beaten for chewing it.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, no. It's worse than fifth fucking grade.
Jeez. Wow. And I thought the nuns were mean, Bob.
Navy has a base there.
Do we? It could be, yeah. But rumor has it it's going to be Singapore, but of course Trump has to treat it like some sort of reality television show reveal. We've set a date and we've set a time and we set a place and we'll announce it later and you'll have to be tuned in to find out.
Let me ask you this, he obviously hasn't thought out his, decision to back out of the Iranian nuclear deal with the effect that might have on North Korea, because, there's no despot in his right mind would trust the U.S. not to attack them or not to, you know, to abide by the treaties once they give up the nuclear weapons. Look what happened to Saddam. Look what happened to Gaddafi.
Right. What this is going to wind up being is a peace between South Korea and North Korea, and we're going to be diplomatically frozen out of it.
Oh, you mean as far as the Iran will comply, and so will the UK, France, Britain, and China, and
yeah, they're all going to continue the agreement, and just make us look like an embarrassment. The problem is with the Iran deal. There are elements, you know, one of the biggies in it is the purchase by Iran of an updated fleet of passenger aircraft.
Right.
And they spread the love around to both Boeing and Airbus.
Mm-hmm.
But Airbus relies on some technologies that are manufactured only in the United States and are deemed by the government to be sensitive.
Okay.
And so if those components cannot be sold to Iran, then Airbus is kind of screwed too.
Unless they can develop their own technology that's not American based, you know?
Yeah.
Well, there's 100,000 people involved with the Boeing deal.
Hmm.
Trump's screwing everybody, the farmers, the aircraft workers, steel,
well, he kind of reminds me of like one of these meth heads who just like gets tweaked and like takes apart stuff and just leaves it laying around, you know? He doesn't give a shit, you know?
No, I've known hillbillies like that. It just can't leave well enough alone, and
yeah.
So there's an old lawnmower laying around. I can get that running. And, you know, three hours and a 24-pack of Keystone later, it's in 600 parts in your front yard.
Right.
And it's never going to be put back together again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
And that's,
exactly.
You know, that's Trump. Only he's got an entire nation to do that to instead of a beat up old snapper.
Right. Oh, jeez.
I'm going to say, me and my minion did a homemade project the other day.
Yeah?
We made a homemade dog bed.
Oh, that's cool.
I had the box that my brand new walker came in that I ordered for me because my Judy needed hers. Cause I need a walker to get around because I got a stiff leg.
Hmm.
And I don't go to the doctor on the 7th of June. Hopefully I can get greased. But anyway, I used a big piece of the cardboard from that box. Used an old foam egg crate-like mattress that we had that went on Dad's hospital bed. And I cut that down and matched the size of the cardboard. And then I used an old throw rug. And then we hand stitch with tie wraps around the outside of the cardboard to put it all, tie it all down to the cardboard. So when Grady comes, he's got a new dog bed in the shop.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, lucky Grady. Is your son-in-law bringing Grady with him? Or your stepson, rather? Not son-in-law, stepson.
Yeah, I mean, Grady goes everywhere with him now. I mean, I only babysat him while he was over in Nevada getting his neck surgery taken care of and everything because they had to live in an apartment and they couldn't take care of him.
Mm.
Oh, hey, this is one of those public health updates. A couple of 3 weeks back, we were talking about the romaine lettuce problem. Remember that?
Oh, God, yeah.
Well, this thing won't go away.
Mm.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have issued an update for the outbreak today, and now 149 people in 29 states have gotten sick.
Mm.
And it's been going on for 2 weeks. And I was in the grocery store the other day, and there was a guy behind me with a bag of, bagged romaine lettuce. And, I'm not trying to ruin anybody's day, but I looked at him and said, dude, you do know that people are getting sick from E. coli off that. And he said, yeah, I heard something about that, but I don't think it affects us. I said, good for you.
Did you look at him and say, do you know where your romaine lettuce comes from?
No, good for you.
Well, because I guess one less Trump voter down the road there. You never know.
Yeah, well, I mean,
MAGA, baby.
Maybe that's the new default answer, Rick. MAGA, baby. I don't think dragging a bunch of romaine through a bunch of shit's going to affect me. Me neither. MAGA.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but it's going on, and I mean I can't remember the last time I ate a salad. I quit. I love salad.
Well, what I do eat is I eat arugula. I don't know if it's affected arugula, Bob.
But the thing is, we stopped for lunch on the day that that we were hemorrhaging money on the on the repairs of the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And Agnes said, and they said, well, you have for your side. And she said, well, I'd like a salad, blue cheese. And I looked at her and said, are you crazy? And she said, well, I don't think it's going to have any. I mean, they know where they. And I said, no, they don't. Yeah. Romaine isn't sourced that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so no salad. But I mean, and the thing is, if you get a so-called garden salad or a green salad, it might have some romaine in it, and it might just have that one piece of romaine that's been dragged through some poo.
Jeez. What area did they narrow it down to as far as the...
Yuma, Arizona.
Oh, Yuma. Okay.
But unlike say, you buy a pound of butter,
mm-hmm.
and there's this lengthy code on it that will basically get you back to the cow.
Right.
That for some reason that doesn't happen. I'm sure it's a job-killing regulation. Never mind the human killing romaine, the human killing E. coli.
Right.
But I'm sure something like that. And it's not like you can tag a head of romaine like you can, a humpback whale or something.
Right.
But that's worrisome that this is. That's worrisome that this is going on for into its third week. And now we're at the over halfway point of number of states affected.
Hmm.
So that means it kind of got everywhere.
Yeah, I know somebody in California died like a couple of weeks ago from that. I don't know if there have been any more deaths. Do you know, Sparky?
No, I haven't heard anything. I thought the lettuce in California comes from the Imperial Valley.
Yeah, no, and there's not an Imperial Valley problem, but... Apparently, it's difficult. According to everything I've read, it's difficult to tell.
Hmm. Well.
Oh, by the way, a recommendation on grits. Steve in New York tells me, and this is who I was thinking of when I said go way uptown. Sylvia's in Harlem has good grits, as does Amy Ruth's.
Hmm.
Yeah, I always think of Sylvia's because it goes back to that conniption. Bill Falafel O'Reilly threw about Sylvia's.
Mm.
How surprised he was that all those black people were behaving like human beings. I hadn't had a nice note from Irwin here. Yeah, just a minute. Sorry, stink bug. Erwin said, just a note on how much I liked your show last Monday with your coverage of your state and the coverage of the lynching museum in Alabama. I watched Parts Unknown, Tony Bourdain, on West Virginia. I noticed all the praying, too, and had a suspicion it was overrepresented. The bear meat took me back, too. I wish they would have interviewed you for the other 30% of your state. Randy Rhodes talked about the show and thought the automatic guns were over the top. I've corresponded with her a little and sent her your podcast. Well, thank you, Erwin, as she likes podcasts. I told her that was the rest of the story. I hope you're doing well and appreciated you covering mountaintop removal. I worked in mine reclamation, but never anything like that in North Dakota. There's nothing quite like what happens here in Appalachia. Have a good day, says Erwin. Thank you, Erwin. Thank you very kindly for your note. And you kind of got to see it to appreciate it, what goes on here. And by the way, on the way out the door here, and we'll finish up, and thanks for knocking as much of this out as y'all did. Thank you so much to Charlene in Rhode Island and Darlene in Connecticut, Rhode Island and Connecticut standing together. Thank you, both of you. Thank you to Roberto for jumping in. Thank you to Steve for his challenge. Thank you to Larry. And thank you to Silent R. Lamar. It's a great weight off my shoulders. It truly, truly is. And it is a tremendous help indeed. And come next Monday, we'll have hope maybe it'll get knocked down a little bit, but we got about $130 to finish off Monday to, actually we're finishing off last Friday, Monday, Tuesday, and tonight. So thank you all very much.
Let's reduce that by 30. Okay. I'll throw in 30 here at the end.
Well, thank you, Rick. Thank you very kindly. You bet. That was not the purpose. I wasn't trying to shake you down, buddy.
No, I know. I just want you to, be able to send off, take a couple of days off. Send off your aunt and what have you, and get caught up with family again and not have to worry so much about fundraising,
I wish I didn't sweat it, and maybe someday there'll be some way where just tuck away 1 month so that we're not raising, we're not raising in the current time, but we're raising for the have a cushion is what I'm getting at. But we're not there right now, and without some significant help, Agnes and I would have walked home from the car dealer, and thanks very kindly for the help that we got in that regard. So thank you very kindly, Billable Rick. That takes us down to $100 to go, and that's a big deal indeed. By the way, Terrace with the notes is, Terrace had asked earlier, he said, wouldn't your dumbass neighbors be happier living in their own country defined by poverty, rotting teeth, black air, guns, Jesus, and hangers instead of doctors? Calexico will have no borders. Trumpistan will require a wall guarded by AR-15 equipped Nazis to keep the white slaves in their place. I responded and told Terrace, well, they pretty much already do have their own country. That's the problem. They want to remake the entire nation in their own image, and someday they'll come for California. But Terrace said, so true. My father was stationed in Savannah during the Vietnam War. That's as much as I know about the South. His redneck radar isn't so good, having grown up in the Central Valley of California. It is a different world, very much so. And in many ways, a beautiful world. But a different one, just the same. So thank you, Billable Rick, and thank you, Sparky, for this prayer meeting Wednesday on the front porch. Thanks again to everybody who keeps this program on the air. A significantly smaller number than the people who participate and share their precious finite time engaged in this conversation. My thanks go out to you as well. And thank you very kindly to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to our chat room moderator, Sparky, and to Midweek Pinch Hit Utility chat room moderator, Steve from Georgia Stan, all-around great guy. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. thank you very kindly to our buddy John Fox. I got a note from him last night saying, hey, mate, watched you in real time here in Oz. Thanks, John. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all. Back Monday.